You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
G'day, Tobia here for this week's edition of Stick Together, the only national program focusing on union news, worker stories, and social justice issues. This program is produced in Naarm, Melbourne, for 3CR, and broadcast across the Community Radio Network, with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. On the stolen lands of the Kulin Nations, we recognise that our struggles are connected and stand in staunch solidarity with elders past, present, and emerging. On today's episode, we will hear an interview with Independent Workers of Great Britain organiser Rema while he was down here on a solidarity networking trip. We hear about the challenges in organising gig economy workers in the UK and some of the work that the IWGB does. But first, some union news. The first item comes from the desk of Comrade Sarah Misson from her Exceptional Disputes report, and it covers a ludicrously flailing Queensland ALP conference and a motion that may have well been penned on a napkin over a few too many beers at the pub. Quoting Sarah, quote, "I do my best not to embroil myself with the machinations of the Labour Party, but a comrade shared with me a photo of a resolution from the Queensland Labour Conference, which was held over the weekend, and I felt compelled to respond to it. The motion was entitled, Scab Unions Have No Place in Queensland, and moved, quote, that this conference, one, condemns NPAQ, TPAQ, AMPS, RAFWU, and other red unions who continue to sow division within our union movement, two, calls on the Miles government to continue to affirm their position and do everything it can to ensure that scab unions have no place in Queensland. Well, one of these things is not like the other. NPAQ, Nurses Professional Association of Queensland, TPAQ, Teachers Professional Association of Queensland, and AMPS, Australian Medical Professional Society, are self-described red unions with deep ties to the LMP. They were set up prior to the COVID pandemic by Graham Haycroft, the former chair of the LMP's Industrial Relations and Employment Policy Committee, but really came into their own challenging vaccine mandates. Haycroft's credentials also include being a member of the HR Nichols Society, a supporter of the Joe for PM campaign, and a franchisee of Labour Hire Fire Troubleshooters Available, with which he intervened and severely damaged the AWU's unionisation of shearers in Queensland in the 1990s. The problem with these so-called red unions isn't that they are not registered trade unions or that they are not affiliated to the ACTU or QCU. The problem with these unions, quote-unquote, is that they exist to undermine the genuine organisation of workers and have no interest in the improvement of conditions for the working class as a whole. While it may be justified to call MPAQ, TPAQ and AMPS, quote, scab unions, this label is in no way suitable to apply to RAFWU. RAFWU was set up in 2016 by activists and workers following the Fair Work Commission overturning several EBAs that had been negotiated by the SDA and large national employers, including Coles. The Fair Work Commission found that these EBAs left workers worse off than if they had been on the award, failing the better off overall test, with the registered union SDA for their industry area caught doing sweetheart deals with the bosses. Workers felt compelled to start a new union. RAFWU describes itself as a, quote, member-led democratic union and is doing what the SDA failed to do for decades, actually organising workers in retail and fast food rather than cutting deals with the bosses. RAFWU is not undermining the organisation of workers. It is in fact improving the organisation of workers in its sector. So why has RAFWU been lumped in with the red unions? While you or I might not give two s**ts as to whether a union is registered or has the blessing of Sally McManus, much of the union establishment is at best uneasy and at worst hostile to RAFWU. In addition to that, the mover and seconder of the motion both have links to the AWU, a factional ally of the SDA, so why not lump the SDA's number one enemy, RAFWU, with the quote-unquote union set up by AWU enemy Graham Haycroft? as train services in Melbourne begin operating throughout the newly opened Metro Tunnel mega project, the Victorian State Labor Party has continued to deride the very real legitimate safety concerns that the Firefighters Union has put forward throughout the year preceding the grand opening. From the UFU Bulletin, quote, firefighters say they won't be able to access parts of the $15 billion Metro Tunnel if there are emergencies due to outdated underground breathing equipment. The state's firefighting union says a formal warning was issued a year ago that specialist long-duration oxygen tanks would soon reach the end of their shelf life and were no longer available for reorder. The equipment provides air for up to 4 hours, compared to just over half an hour for regular mask systems, and can be used during disasters in mines or deep tunnels. In a statement by United Firefighters Union Secretary Peter Marshall, he had this to say, quote, Victorian Premier Jacinta Allen's decision to smear firefighters in comments made after they referred the Metro Rail operator to the National Rail Safety Regulator on the basis of legal advice have drawn a sharp response. Firefighters hold grave safety concerns because radios have failed testing in both tunnels, and the fire service does not have long-duration breathing apparatus needed for underground rescue. Speaking to media on Monday, the Premier said that firefighters had an agenda and that, quote, these claims are being made perhaps more for industrial purposes than anything else. United Firefighters Union Secretary Peter Marshall said that the suggestion that firefighters with a solemn duty to protect life and property would confect safety issues where none exist for some unspecified industrial gain was offensive to the men and women putting their lives on the line in Victoria. Quote, firefighters have taken an oath to protect the public at the cost of their own lives if need be. We are appalled that Premier of this state, elected by the same members of the public firefighters protect, is willing to smear that oath by suggesting that firefighters would lie about radio coverage and breathing equipment. The reason that firefighters are talking about breathing equipment and radios is because we need them to protect people from harm. It is the same reason we were talking about them to Fire Rescue Victoria leadership 18 months ago in the context of the Metro Tunnel. Had we been consulted by Metro Trains when they were forming their emergency management plan, as we are required to be under the National Rail Safety Regulations, we would have spoken to them about it in great detail. We are not politicians, we do not need to be popular, our duty is to public safety, not to public opinion. Going international now, popular video game developer Rockstar Games has recently come into the spotlight following accusations of union busting after the firing of 34 workers, 31 of which are from the UK and 3 of which are from Canada, through a process that has sent shockwaves throughout the industry. The games developer is one of the most famous video game studios, known for the incredibly successful Grand Theft Auto franchise, with its most recent project, 2013's GTA 5, grossing over $8 billion in sales to date. The UK workers are represented by the games division of the IWGB, the Independent Workers of Great Britain. Union representatives say that it is a targeted firing, as all 34 workers who were fired by the company under charges of gross misconduct were either union members or were involved in trade union activity. The charge of gross misconduct will place a permanent mark on the records of workers and will severely hinder future working prospects. Rockstar Games issued a cloudy statement that claims the workers were sharing confidential company information on a public platform, alluding to leaks that regularly plague the industry and muddying the waters. The reality seems much clearer as the workers were communicating on a closed Discord server with IWGB representatives. IWGB President Alex Marshall said in an interview about the matter, quote, "This looks like nothing more than union busting. There's a clear pattern as to the people who have been affected by this. The way that they are calling it a platform like they were on these big open forums spouting secrets on the company, this was a finite union Discord in which people were discussing their material conditions at the company, and they should be legally protected to do that. It looks like they are trying to decapitate the union when they see it's gathering momentum, when they see it's passing this 10% membership threshold, and instead of thinking, oh, our workers are unionizing, clearly that's something we should engage with, they tried to steamroll it and completely gut the company of the union so they can continue with behaviors that have been deeply problematic and toxic, and were the exact reason workers started unionizing. I think what Rockstar have done is just prove out in the open what workers were trying to counter behind closed doors. They are the ones who've been very public about this, not the workers. the figure of 10% unionisation being a crucial element of the puzzle, as in the UK it is a key criteria for a government-enforced statutory recognition which would force the company to officially recognise the union regardless of its affiliation to official trade union bodies. Independent video game journalist Chris Bratt of People Make Games says, quote, "It can't be understated how big a Rockstar Games union would be for the British games industry. Rockstar may well go through a tribunal and be found to have broken the law, and maybe there's going to be some payments that need to happen as part of that. Maybe there are larger settlements that happened before then. But you have to wonder whether or not that's a price that this extremely lucrative company would be willing to pay in order to crush a union." In communicating the workers' termination, the 31 UK workers, some of whom migrants who moved to the country for the job, and others who have been with the company for at least a decade, were called to the premises and after a brief meeting were handed an envelope outlining the reasons the company decided to fire them. They were then promptly escorted out of the premises, not being allowed to interact in any way with their colleagues or co-workers. IWGB have initiated a legal claim against Rockstar Games for unfair dismissal, and rallies have been held outside of the offices of Rockstar Games, with parts of the community showing up in solidarity with the fired workers. An IWGB organizer on the scene named Fred, in an interview, put forward the terms that they are seeking. Quote, "The reinstatement of all 31 workers in the UK who have been fired, and 3 workers in Toronto who we know our sister union in Canada are working to support. Full compensation for pay costs during this period. Clear accountability for the way these dismissals have been handled. What happens next is up to Rockstar. The ball is in their court." When asked about the potential of Rockstar Games having done all the accounting and accepting the final bill in terms of fiscal and public fallout, the organiser shared this anecdote. "I think we are in the fight of our lives. The thing I think about before going to bed at night is that they'll have accounted for the press. They'll have accounted for the bad press they'll get. They'll have accounted for delays to the game that will result from having fired essential workers. They'll have accounted for the money they might have to pay to settle in court, and they've decided it's worth it. What they will never have accounted for, and something that I've never... What they will never have accounted for, and something that I've never seen management account for, is the bonds people feel in their work, their willingness to stand up for each other and fight, the strength that's in a collective of people willing to put themselves at risk, willing to put their voices in the mix and stand behind them. And they don't account for that because they don't understand it. They've never seen it. And they haven't seen it in the games industry. They haven't seen it in their boardrooms. And they are about to find out what that means. And I think that's something they don't account for because they can't."
Stick together.
You're listening to Stick Together on Community Radio.
And now we go to the studios of 3CR and we hear what IWGB organiser Rema had to say. Well, Rema, welcome.
Yes, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Do you want to tell our listeners a bit of who you are, what you do, and what it means for you to come to the other side of the world and meet people that are organising in similar ways?
Yeah, well, my name's Rema. I'm a member of the Independent Workers of Great Britain. I've been with them for 4 years. I'm an organiser for drivers. And our union basically organise and represent and try to activate gig economy workers such as cleaners, security guards, yoga teachers, cycling instructors, couriers. We have quite a few branches. We're a very active union. We believe in bottom-up type organisation and activating workers to improve their working conditions, but also to change society. I'm also, I would call, a revolutionary Pan-Africanist. So that's where I cut my teeth on understanding the world and having a certain view of the world that puts people before profit. And also that as a person of African descent, I understand that my dignity is wrapped around the unification of the African continent under a just social and economic system for Africans of home and abroad. So that quite easily fits into the work I'm doing at the moment in the union. I have the same philosophies and principles and understand the same objectives. So I have a dual kind of purpose.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what's been interesting as we talked. It's just like how many of the conditions that you guys are organizing against are very similar conditions that exist here for workers to organize against as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting, as you said, that the same conditions that are happening in the UK are happening here. We have a Labour government, for instance, which is going more to the right. We have a massive movement supporting the Palestinians to stop the genocide in Gaza. We have an upsurge of racist and far-right support. And, you know, the unions and those who are progressive and advocate for freedom and democracy and justice, we need to come together and start to organise and build. So, yeah, I can see the similarities of what you're going through here and what's happening in the UK, although there might be different nuances. The issues of racism are becoming worse. Various communities are being attacked. We had a situation a year or two ago where, you know, they tried to burn down hotels where immigrants were being held, and these immigrants are coming from places like Iraq, from Syria, from Palestine, from West Africa, where imperialism or the system that controls the world and tries to, in various brutal ways, to control people, they're escaping wars and total devastation. So it's the same situation.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because we also had refugees staying in hotels here in indefinite detention centers in the center of the city. The work that your union does is crucial in organizing some of the most vulnerable workers in our society. What have been some of the strategies that you have seen succeed in the workplaces that you've organized?
Yeah, well, I can definitely talk from the private hire driver situation. I'm an organizer for drivers, and we have this saying, driving alone, fighting together, no one left behind. As you know, when you're driving, you're alone. So we don't have a specific, as an organizer for driver, we don't have a specific place or a work area where we can all congregate. Drivers are usually, they drive by themselves, but they do congregate in car parks, mosques, cafes. And as the same is here, most of the drivers, I would say 98, 99% are either non-white or immigrant workers. So they have their own communities, their own WhatsApp groups. So we understand that the only way to build power and to build capacity is to engage, to build trust, to build confidence. And that's very important. So that's our strategy, is to create that situation, and also to do actions which are relevant to the workers. We had a number of actions this year that's really increased our membership and also our activity of drivers getting involved. And we're now building a group of drivers that we're expanding all the time that want to go out there and be active. So we're continuing that strategy of engagement, activity, and then organizing people and politically educating them to understand the steps and the process of actually building capacity and power.
Well, it's like we were saying, the drive over here was that actually you can't stop people from organizing. And so the best work that we can all do as community organizations, as community radios, or as unions, is to give people the means to organize themselves and provide for them the structures into which they will succeed.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we want to, our philosophy is basically to obviously recruit into the union, but also to give people the tools and the confidence to organize themselves and to build relationships with communities and groups. Because I believe that the only way that we're going to move forward is when we collaborate with each other, we create united fronts, and we collaborate on things that we have in common. And there are so many things that the things that we have in common far outweigh the things that divide us. All communities are going through the same thing, maybe from different perspectives, but they are all very similar, and we need to find ways that we can work together.
The way the world is going, as the contradictions sharpen and we continue to exist under worsening neoliberal capitalist conditions, the need for community to be organized is only going to increase. And I think that's part of what brings us together today, is the need for internationalism, need to broaden this struggle in proportion to the global financial interests that control our daily lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been absolutely blown away with meeting you and meeting other organizers. And it's just so easy to engage and interact and to, you know, push forward that whole aspect of solidarity and international solidarity. I'm here on holiday for a family sort of situation, for a wedding, but I thought it was important for me to take the time out to really link up with various people, various organisations, to understand what you're doing, to also, you know, share what we're doing in the UK and to see how we can support each other and learn from each other, because I think that's very important. So, you know, and part of one of our strategies was, or one of our activities, we actually were able to link up with drivers or unions in Nigeria, in Uruguay and the United States to do a log off. And we want to expand that. Maybe we'll have Australia in there as well. But not only just drivers, but as unions and as groups that are trying to improve people's working lives and to change society.
It's of no greater importance now that there's a drive to war, that workers really be united. I mean, in the UK especially, the impacts of what an eventual war in Europe could look like would be borne by the brunt of the workers more than any of the ruling class.
Absolutely. Yeah, we can see the well, it's very scary what's happening in Ukraine and Russia right now, and the rise of the right all over Europe. And, you know, we know that all the wars have always come because of there's been a crisis in capitalism, and then there's been a rearrangement of a fight around the spoils of at one point, the First and Second World Wars, around the colonial situation. But that has changed now. Although the colonies have got their so-called independence, they're still not independent. And workers, obviously, are also, not only are they being exploited, but they're being pulled into this whole race, sometimes this racist kind of narrative, blaming immigrants for basically what the ruling class are doing to their own lives. Immigrants have no power to do these things. So we need to find ways of joining immigrants with the indigenous working classes in Europe, and also to educate everybody that our enemy are the ruling class.
And that's interesting that part of the union organizing strategy that you guys do is really provide a political understanding of the conditions that create precarity and create casualization in the workforce and are actually the end cause of what all the effects that these workers feel on their daily life, struggle to work. And how important is that as a strategy in your arsenal of tools?
It's actually key, because there's a without an understanding of who your oppressor is and why you can't afford to, you know, you're working like on a subsistence level, or why you can't afford your rent, or why you can't afford to send your, they're not decent schools to send your children, et cetera, why it's so expensive to feed your family, you know, the list goes on. You sometimes can quite easily blame other people who are just poor like you, or you're blaming, even in our case, sometimes they blame the union. Oh, why can't you do something about this? And so political education is important to understand not only different communities and what they're going through, but also the source of the oppression, the source of the austerity, and not just the source in regards to current situation, but going back, you know, decades, even centuries. We have at least one or two union-wide, what we called a political economy education sort of seminars, where we come together and we actually learn from each other, but have a presentation about how the ruling class rule and get, you know, allow and encourage drivers or workers to sort of make their own input. So it's very, very important, because unless we understand the world, we won't know how to change it and we won't know who the enemy is.
And there's also combating the feeling that people need to know everything all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas providing someone the resource to learn and encouraging them to learn it,
yeah,
gives them really that opportunity to learn something for themselves.
Exactly.
Rather than being told it by a right-wing shock jockey,
exactly,
radio host.
Yeah. I mean, we're always encouraging people to, we might present the information, but we always encourage people to say, do your own research. You know, don't take our word for it. Make sure that you corroborate this with your own research, because it's one thing being told something; it's another thing understanding it. It's internal, so that's very important.
And you said you joined the union, or you became a union organizer 4 years ago. What was your sort of briefly maybe your journey into coming into this role and finding yourself on the other side of the world in a community radio station talking about it?
Well, I've always, as I said before, I was in an organization that advocated for revolutionary Pan-Africanism. So I understood that being organized, Kwame Nkrumah, the first president of Ghana, said organization determines everything. So I understand unless we're organized, nothing will change. So every job I've had, I've always joined a union out of principle. Some unions have been, I would say, like a cooperative union that didn't really, weren't active as such and just took what the bosses said. Other unions were a little bit more active. Luckily, when I became a driver, because I was made redundant and I just took up driving just in case, well, that in case came to be. So I joined the IWGB. I'm not sure exactly how that happened, but I had a leaflet. I said, right, they look good. I'm going to join them. And the rest is history. I became active. I became a vice chair. A job came up in the union. I went for the job. And because of my activity, you know, I got the job. And I have been doing that for the last 4 years. And the last year has been really transformational. We've really started to recruit. We've started to, as I said, get a core of active drivers, and we're going to increase that recruitment and going to increase the number of active drivers.
I mean, it's so inspiring to hear you, to hear your story, but also to hear you have done all the things that you've done in your life. I mean, just maybe as a final word to any aspiring people that want to organize, any young organizers or any young workers that are stuck under bureaucratic work structures, to just go out there and do it, what would you tell them?
I would say join a trade union, because a trade union is the best democratic type of formation that is available right now. Even if that trade union is maybe not be as active as it should be, as a young person young people usually have a lot of energy, you know, have a lot of conviction. We want to change the world. Well, you can't do it by yourself. You need to be organized and you need to work with other people. And you need to encourage, if not force, the leadership of some of these unions that might not be as active as they should be to be active and to do the correct thing. And also that, you know, we need to have formations that are people-centered and help people and are a bottom-up type of structure, not a top-down. Because unless there's real democracy, and that democracy is doing everything it can to improve the working conditions for ordinary people, nothing will change.
Rema, thank you very much for taking the time to do the interview with us.
Thank you so much. Can I just say one more thing?
Absolutely.
I was incorrect in not actually giving my support to the First Nation people. I should have said that at the beginning, and I apologize. This land belongs to the First Nation people, and we must do everything as workers to support their struggle for equality, for freedom, and for their land.
That's it for Stick Together this week. If you want to catch up with our program, the podcast is available at 3cr.org.au or at your favorite podcast site. You can contact the producers of the show at sticktogether3cr@gmail.com or by ringing 03-9419-8377 and leaving us a message. My name's Tobia. Remember, wherever you are, whatever you do, there is a union for you. And until next time, stick together.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.